So, good morning. I was just spending a few minutes outside before coming into the computer. And noticing a beautiful, cool breeze on my skin, the cool freshness of the air coming into my lungs, dew on the cabbage tree leaves glistening in the sun, birds flying overhead and drinking from the freshly fallen rain in the neighbor's guttering. And men out on the street fixing the water main. And just reflecting that there is so much to appreciate in each moment. So far through the days, we've taken up the objects of attention of body and breathing, physical sensations, pleasant and unpleasant and neutral, the feeling tone, hearing and seeing. And today I'd like to extend the object of our attention out to include the emotional life. And the emotional life is another aspect of body and mind that can so easily carry us away from presence. And just to be really clear, we sometimes talk of the emotions as being feelings. And so I just want to be very clear that in this tradition, when we're talking about feelings, we mean feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And what we might often think of as feelings, I'm calling emotions today. So emotions, anger, sadness, grief, joy, happiness, contentment, sorrow, self-pity, disappointment, fear, anxiety, irritation, the whole spectrum of human emotion. And I also want to include moods. So sometimes we can notice that we're in a bit of a dark mood. And it's as if we're seeing our experience through a dark lens. We tend to see the unpleasant and what's wrong. And other times we might be in a more upbeat mood. And it might be like seeing everything through a rose-tinted lens. We notice the good. Things seem better. And we can just start to notice how the underlying mood that is being experienced might be colouring what we're noticing. So, with emotion, just as with all other experience, some emotions are pleasant, some are unpleasant, and some are neutral. And they might not always be what we expect. So anger, for example, can feel both unpleasant or it can feel quite pleasant. we can feel quite self-righteous, justified in our anger. And so it's not necessarily that any particular emotion will always have the same flavor. So we can really notice whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral in this experience of it. And with that, we have the same tendencies towards clinging, towards wanting it, or towards aversion. And particularly with emotion, we can find ourselves interfering with the experience to maintain it, sustain it, keep it there. And with the example that I just gave with anger, or even with upset, with self-pity, you know, we can sometimes get enmeshed in that for days. I know I have, going round and round, ruminating, trying to figure out whether it's my fault or someone else's fault, whether it's my responsibility, whether I can blame someone else. You know, these things can really have some seductive power for us. So we can notice too that some emotions are related to the past, tend to be coming out of the past. So things like shame or guilt or remorse, regret, embarrassment. And others are more related to the future. So anxiety or fear or worry. And it's almost sometimes like we think, we feel is that if we worry enough, the solution will come. We'll figure it out. We'll figure out what to do. But that's to miss the fact that we're only one parameter in that story. There's other people and there's the whole world, and we can't predict what they're going to do. So then we come up with endless plans, plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D, and probably what will happen is plan E. So it's all a waste of time. I'm speaking from experience here. And in fact, what we find is that often the solution comes from silence and from calm clarity. That's how we find our way through. Have you noticed that? Sometimes we talk about sleeping on it. We're just going to sit. So each of us has familiar pathways of emotion. Some of us find emotion really easy to feel. Some emotions we find easy to feel. We might find it quite easy to feel sadness. And other emotions we might find quite difficult to be in touch with. So anger might be one of those. And many, many people automatically suppress their anger. In our society, particularly for women, there's been conditioning. There can be a conditioning that it's not okay to express that. So we shove it down. So it's really important to know our relationship to our emotions, to know which ones we get stuck on, and which ones are repetitive for us or predominant, which ones are distant or removed or difficult to feel or open to. So knowing our patterns. And some people are really aware of and easily swamped by emotions. So they might experience, you might experience these emotions as powerful tidal waves, quite overwhelming. And for others, emotional life can be quite buried, and it can be quite difficult to know what you feel. It may take time to figure that out. It might be 24 hours later before you go, oh, yeah, I was actually feeling angry. Or I was doubting myself. And so we can draw closer to the emotional life. Ask ourselves, what am I feeling now? And the practice with that is really coming more into the body, coming out of the mind, out of the head, out of the stories. So some of us need to practice finding our emotions, and others of us need to practice releasing them. So choosing a wise response depending on your tendencies. So there's some helpful steps to mindfulness of emotions, of the emotional life. And the first step is just to recognize emotions when they arise. So we can use a gentle noting. Sorrow, sadness, anxiety, joy, happiness, contentment. And we can also be interested in the gradations. So anger, for instance, can go all the way from irritation through annoyance, anger, rage, and then fury, outrage. So being clear about the degree. With fear, we can move from anxiety through fear to absolute terror. And we can also notice the feeling tone. So that's the first step, recognizing the emotions when they arise. And the second step is around acceptance. I like to think of it also as attend and befriend. So acceptance of the emotion. Emotions are located in the body. We come into the body and explore. What we see is that each emotion has a package of physical sensations that accompany it. Perhaps you've noticed this. So when there's fear, we tend to have knots in our stomach or butterflies, a quickening of the heart, tension in the shoulders. We often feel cold. With sadness, we might feel some heat in the face, in the front of the face, a lump in the throat, a feeling of heaviness, and a pricking in the eyes as the tears come. Grief, we might notice sensations in the heart center. Yeah. Deep feelings of grief. We can really feel it moving through this area in the chest. And love we also experience in the same area. So our practice here is to be with the feelings as they are without controlling them, manipulating or suppressing or rejecting on one hand, and also without amplifying them or letting them escalate into a tidal wave on the other hand. The Buddha in the body. He was very specific. So not ideas about emotions, but direct experience. And I'm just getting messages that my internet is unstable, so I'm just fixing that. So not ideas about the emotions, but direct experience. Not the stories about the emotions. And we can make the body a friendly place for emotions. For all emotions. You know, we can have this idea of the spiritual path as being about particular emotions like love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And have this idea that that's what we should be experiencing. And then reject or judge heavily other human emotions. So just seeing whether we can allow all emotion without judgment, without any self-loathing, without self-judgment. Excuse me. A compassionate, open-heartedness to all of the emotional life that's there. All-inclusive, permissive, and accepting. So that's the second step. Attend and befriend, accept. And then the third step is we can investigate. So one of the things that it's really interesting to see is that is the way that thoughts and emotions are related. There's a sort of thought-emotion cycle. So if we think of thoughts as voices in the mind, dialogues, words, language, and emotions as this package of moving sensations in the body, of energy, heat, tightness, contraction, coolness. And the storyline, if we get lost and caught in it, the storyline feeds the emotion. So whatever we're telling us, you know, poor me, me, whatever, it reinforces the emotion. When we're caught in the story, it actually fuels the emotion and maintains and sustains it. And the Buddha talked about, you know, this being like putting fuel on a fire. And particularly with fear and anger, when we're caught in the story that's going along with those, they can really escalate like wildfire. And so to interrupt that, we can push the stop button on the story. And without that story, the emotion can't sustain. We can come into the body with it. A few years ago, I was on a Dharma gathering, which is a non-silent week-long retreat that includes families. And there was a baby on this Dharma gathering. And I noticed one morning this baby was crying. And then it noticed something. And suddenly there was just this complete change of mood to smiles. And that's really how quickly an emotion can change when there's no story. Yeah, you may have noticed this with very young babies, how this happens. And if it's a difficult emotion and it's really strong, has really strong feelings like anger, then we can use the breath to just breathe deeply into it. Release on the out breath. Or we can change posture. So the different postures really have different qualities. So the sitting posture has qualities of real stability and openness. The standing posture has a real strength and energy to it. So we can experiment with these. So using movement and breath and body to sustain presence and openness to the emotional life. And we might notice that some emotions recur obsessively. We release, and then a few minutes later they're back again, over and over. And often when this happens, it can be that there's something that we're not feeling in the body or not acknowledging, or something that's being slightly suppressed. So with anger, for example, when we drop underneath that, what we often find is fear. So can we come into the body and go deeper and look underneath? And I find it really helpful with this to have a little inquiry question of, is there something here that's not being seen? Is there something that's not being seen? And it may also be that there's an underlying fixed belief there that isn't being seen. And our belief of self-worth, some self-loathing, I don't deserve this. Or it could be, it shouldn't be like this. That one was a favorite of mine for years. It shouldn't be like this. In the end, I wrote on a piece of paper and pinned it in the kitchen next to the stove, there's no reason why it shouldn't be like this. Just as a reminder about that one. So that's the third step, is to investigate, bring some curiosity and interest. And the fourth step is to see that it's impersonal. It's not me. It's not mine. It's just like the weather passing through. It's a human experience, sorrow, joy, contentment, happiness visiting, a storm of anger. And we can see with this that this actually connects us, all of us together, to every being. We all experience this coming and going of emotion. It's not unique to us. It's simply an energy that has come to visit. It arises, stays for a while, and passes. It doesn't have to define who we are. You know, we say, I am an angry person. No, anger has come to visit. And your experience of anger or sadness isn't so different to my experience of anger or sadness. So we're exploring the human condition, what it is to be human. And emotions bring connection with others, connection with the world. So there's an acronym for these four steps. Some of you may know it. It's the word RAIN, R-A-I-N. So the first step was recognize. The second was accept or attend and befriend. The third was investigate. And the last was, not me, not mine. So So that might be helpful to remember those steps. So just with difficult emotions in particular, and in fact difficult anything really, difficult experiences in particular, I actually just would like to offer a physical way that we can assist ourselves with these, a way that can help us draw closer to them with a sense of kindness. And there are some, this is about soothing touch, so giving ourselves soothing touch. And there are some physiologically soothing actions which stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the soothing nervous system, the part of the nervous system that allows us to calm, to still. And the nerve, for those who are interested, the vagus nerve is part of this parasympathetic nervous system. And so these particular forms of touch stimulate the vagus nerve and release oxytocin, which is the same chemical that's released when a mother bonds with her newborn baby. So it's a powerful comforting hormone. And I find this can be incredibly helpful when we're experiencing the difficult. So would you like to try that? Yeah, good. Okay, so invite you to just close your eyes and just take one of your hands and place it on the heart. And just maybe push in gently just a little bit. And experiment with what that feels like. So to the majority of people, that feels soothing and comforting, but not necessarily for everyone. So just check in for yourself how that feels. And now try putting a second hand over the top of that first hand on the heart. And noticing if there's a difference or a similarity. And now with the underneath hand, make it into a fist so that the underneath hand is a fist and the hand on top is cupping it, covering it on the heart. And sometimes that can feel more supportive. Or maybe not. And then just moving your top hand down to your belly, placing the top hand on your belly and flattening out the hand that's on the heart. And then you have one hand, one palm on the belly and one palm on the heart. And just check out how that feels for you. Now bringing the second hand down to the belly, covering the other hand so that you have two hands touching and supporting the belly. You can have a light touch, or you can push in slightly if you need more support. And now move the top hand up so that it's cradling your cheek. So that the palm is on the chin and the fingers on the cheek. Just cradling your cheek. And see how it feels with one hand cradling your cheek. Now move the other hand up so that both hands are cradling the cheek. This is a posture that we often take when confronted with something difficult. We automatically do this. And then finally, just move your arms to give yourself a hug. And this is something that you can do in public and people will just think that you're cold. In fact, you're giving yourself a hug. And so, in your practice today, you can just explore which one of those offers the most support to you and which one feels best for you today. It won't necessarily be the same one tomorrow. I'm really curious how that was for you. What did you notice? If there's anybody that would like to share, it would be lovely to hear. Yeah, Adrian.
Yeah, I found that quite interesting. I often use the hands over my heart, but I've never thought about using a fist and the hand over the fist. And it almost felt like the fist represented the hurt and the pain, and that the hand over it was supporting it and caring for that hurt and the pain. And it felt like it was a real, real sort of physical sense of that, and that they'd been supported and held onto gently and kindly.
Beautiful. Yeah, I've never thought of it like that, but I can see what you're saying. Lovely, thank you. Yes, Benny.
I often do one hand over the heart, and it was really interesting doing two, because it's interesting that comforting and being comforted itself, which is how, you know, supporting ourselves and supporting people always works. It's always interdependent. And so it was, yeah, that felt at the start I was feeling a bit tense and a bit I don't know, had a strange morning and this kind of thing, and I didn't notice that much from the first hand, but then yeah, it changed with the second, and it also brought to light these just funny little things kind of popping up around that distinction between between self and other, because it's like relating to oneself as how one usually relates to another is just so, it's so strange and so kind of profound, because it shows how that isn't really as real a distinction as we usually seem to feel.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can find it doesn't really matter whether it's our own hand or somebody else's. So a very powerful thing that we can offer ourselves there. Thank you. Kath.
Yes. Hi. Kind of similar in that I've done the hands on the heart quite a bit and recognised that. And then the stomach one, I went, oh no, I don't want to be comforted there. And in terms of the whatever emotion that linked with, I was like, oh no, hold on. And I did that quite consciously. And then when you did, I've never done the face one. And my mind is my biggest problem. It's the thing that, you know, is just constantly monkey minding. And I was like, oh, that's nice. And so that was kind of holding my mind in a comforting way, which was, so thank you. It's nice to expand the repertoire with them. And I'll explore why I didn't like the stomach one, what emotion was sitting behind that came up.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And so you're noticing a lot there. Yeah, a lot of different things happening. Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful, thank you. Maybe just one more if anyone wants to. Oh, two, we've got two. Priscilla, yes. You need to unmute yourself, Priscilla.
Sorry, I pressed the button, but not effectively enough. I'm happy for Kaz to go. It was just a kind of little small thing that I noticed. So I am quite familiar with the stomach, and noticed that with the heart, that was quite... I've done it with one hand, but not really ever resonated with it in particular. And this time when I put the second hand over the top hand, then I got an immediate, quite strong physiological response of the breath really slowing right down, and a whole body response to that. And it's like, oh, this is linking to what Jill was talking about last night about not being very good with the self-compassion. The metta. So that was just really good. And then putting the fist underneath, it was like that didn't work. So I removed the fist and put the two. So yes, there was some very nice fine distinctions there. So thank you very much for it.
Wonderful. Thank you, Priscilla. Thank you. And Kaz, last one.
Oops. Yes, I'm muted. I found this one here in Stephen Levine's book about trauma. And during the complete lockdown, I was really missing people hugging me and hugging people. And so I started doing this quite a lot and also teaching it to other people. Amazingly powerful. Yeah, and like you say, you know, it's, yeah, you get it right. That's just as good as somebody else doing it.
Lovely. Great. Thank you.
Thank you for reminding me of all that.
You're welcome. So I think between even just those people who spoke, every single one of those kinds of touches was helpful for somebody. And you might find that it, as I say, it changes from day to day, from moment to moment, what works for you. So these are things, this kind, supportive, soothing touch is something that we can give ourselves in times of difficulty. And it's just a very quick way of acknowledging to ourselves that this hurts and I'm here for you, of meeting our difficulty with kindness. And so that leads into the next thing that I'd like to offer, which is mindful self-compassion. And this comes from a woman called Kristen Neff, who has developed a course on mindful self-compassion, similar to the MBSR, mindfulness-based stress reduction course, and delivered this course thousands of times and researched it. So very, very helpful. And so with mindful self-compassion, this is something that we can bring in when we're experiencing difficulty, difficult emotions in particular today. So the first step is to offer ourselves some kind of soothing touch. So whether it's the hand on the heart or the belly or the fist or the cheeks, whatever it is that feels right for you. So just offering yourself the soothing touch. And then the second step is the acknowledgement that this hurts. This hurts. This is painful. This is a moment of suffering. Or this is really hard. So just recognizing that. And the third step is about acknowledging that suffering is part of life. And that through that experience, we're actually connected with each other. So I'm not alone in feeling this way. Other people feel this as well. It's a common experience of humanity. Many, many other beings in the world going through what we're going through right now. We're not alone, we're connected. So bringing that in, suffering is part of life. And then the last step is turning towards the experience rather than away from, with a kind awareness. And we can use the words there. May I be kind to myself. May I hold my suffering. May I hold my pain with kindness and compassion. Whatever the words are that you're really craving to hear, and just offering that to yourself. So the four steps again, putting the hand, using the soothing touch, acknowledging this hurts, acknowledging that suffering is part of our common humanity, it connects us, suffering is part of life, and then may I hold this suffering, pain, with kindness and compassion. So that's available to us when we're meeting painful emotions, and it can help us draw closer and create a bigger space in the heart to hold the difficulty. So there's some thoughts on working with and being with emotions as we expand and extend out to include our emotional life in our practice today. So let's just stretch for a couple of minutes because we've been sitting for a while. Let's take a couple of minutes just to be kind to our body and then come back and we'll sit together.